this topic of the mitzvahs and chuskas and mikalo. So we started yesterday just to call attention to the fact, let's get the lashon of the Shulchan Aruch here again, that this is a mitzvah. And what exactly is the mitzvah? What's the reason for the mitzvah? What exactly is the source for it? Here I have the language here again. It's a mitzvah, l'sameach chasu v'kalo, l'sasamachay aleph, l'shulchan aruch, v'l'raki v'fneihem, v'lomar shino v'chasuda, afilu ina noa. And the Rama adds, "Umesinu shubihuda by loy v'mrakeid lifne hakala v'vatlan tamet Torah l'hachnosas kala l'chova." Okay, so we asked the question a little bit yesterday to try to understand where this mitzvah come from. Is it a mitzvah min haTorah, a mitzvah midrabanan? And what we seem to see, or at least we lean this way, is that essentially there seems to be a mitzvah daraisa involved, the daraisa of chesed. One could discuss in general the relationship between the general mandate of chesed and the specific instances that we have, and a little bit of a difficult language in the Rambam about that, but however you want to address that relationship, there seems to be a component of chesed here. So then we have asked the question, so if this is chesed, so what is the chesed? Normally the chesed that we talk about when we have Bikur Cholim, Nicham Avelim, and the like, normally it's about helping people who are in a bad situation. Here, this is clearly coming from a different place, hopefully. So what's the nature of the chesed of making people happy who are, hopefully, already happy? So what do we see about that? So I think we had left off on that point yesterday. I think we had maybe had to stop in the middle of the sentence. Anyone want to start at that point? So where is the chesed that's there in Simchas Chasim Kal?
Making happier.
Making happier. So that was one suggestion, that maybe the mitzvah of chesed in general is to make everyone happier than they are, wherever they are on the spectrum. Although if that's the case, it's a little funny that we would focus on this. And we just say that anything you do to brighten someone's day more than already is chesed. It sounds like there's something more going on here, that we're focusing specifically on this event and including specific rules to it. Yitzi?
Prevent that happiness from decreasing.
Prevent it from decreasing. Okay, so follow up on that a little bit. What do you mean by decreasing? And what's the nature of the specific risk, again, here more than anyone else? Why?
Meaning if people don't be misamehafad on the kala, they will become saddened by that.
Okay, so the fact that...
So...
The nature, just sharpen that point a little bit, that the nature of this particular simcha, it's not like you're happy in other ways where you can be left alone and you'll still be just as happy. That here, this is a vulnerable simcha. That if you find that this is going on, and so to speak, no one notices and nobody cares to be with you that day, then that will cause a bad situation. It's one possibility. What else? Sammy?
You mentioned about father who said that we're just like being sure that they know
they're getting a decision and comforting them. Okay, so part of it is chizuk, right? That we want that this is a time when, on the one hand, people are happy, the other hand, it's not like a straightforward, just you win the lottery kind of happy, which is not simple either, but for our purpose, it's relatively simple. So here, there are anxieties, and there's a decision that's made. So maybe there is also a component to it that's not so simple. That on the one hand, it's happy. On the other hand, it also has certain elements of weakness, of vulnerability, and therefore that's similar to the other types of chasadim. That place where the participant has a vulnerability, that's where there is a mitzvah to step in. So it's not like, well, everywhere else we help sad people, and here for some reason we help happy people. We help vulnerable people in all kinds of circumstances, and somebody who's about to take this huge leap, even though we hope it'll be only good, and even though in the best of cases it certainly is good, but it has a vulnerable component to it, and therefore we want to try to fix that part. And from that weak spot, it is comparable to the other chesedim that we have. Sammy?
I also saw today that the Chofetz Chaim says, and I was tested that it, the Iker Mitzvah is for couples who don't have many friends or are poor, so that's like the really important classic.
Okay, so let's think about that for a second. So when he says the Iker Mitzvah, So what does that mean? Does that mean that the mitzvah was only really for those people? Or does that mean that it's a mitzvah in general, but especially if somebody is without so many friends, then they're a higher priority, and all the more so. All the more so you need to pay attention. You hear the question? It's just like, is this dafka to fix the problem of somebody who doesn't have friends, and somebody who doesn't have friends, there's no mitzvah at all? Or is a mitzvah in general, and then especially when you're worried that there isn't anyone else, then the attention comes in greater. I remember seeing a story when they told about Rav Moshe. I thought it was a little bit of a silly story, not because there's anything wrong with the story, it's just the fact that this is considered a chiddush by anyone, because it seems so hushed. But the story was told that Rav Moshe was about to go to a wedding or something. I guess we'll assume it was a wedding for our story, not or something. He's about to go to a wedding, and it was raining outside, and the weather was terrible, a very terrible wind, big storm, and the Talmidim were trying to convince him not to schlep out. They said, "Oh, Rabbi, you don't have to go. Look what it's like outside. Nobody's going to go." Moshe responded, "Nobody's going to go, but all the more so I have to go." So you'd think that's kind of obvious, like, what was the Havamina, that he was going only because of peer pressure, and then, like, he was only going because all the cool people were going, but then if you told him that they weren't going to come, then you didn't feel so obligated. And presumably that wasn't the motive in the first place. I mean, the idea that it's a bigger priority if nobody else is going to go would seem pretty self-evident, but it's relevant to what Sammy's saying. So clearly we do understand that the more somebody may feel an absence of people in general, so that puts a greater responsibility on people who can go to go. But the question is, are we saying so much so that that's the whole mitzvah, or that this is still a mitzvah for everyone, and just it's a greater priority when it's less likely that there'll be other people there?
Hi. You also said that chesed isn't necessarily about helping a disadvantage, it's just about identifying and emphasizing with the person. So whether that's, so normally we do that when things are bad, but we can also do that when things are good as well.
Oh, so that's also a possibility that was discussed yesterday, right? But maybe it's not so much that this is so necessary from a chesed perspective, but that it connects to your whole mentality of chesed. That if chesed is about being connected and is about feeling the emotions of others, so then it's not really possible for that to only work halfway. It'll only be there in the bad times, and the good times are not going to impact you at all. By nature, if you're empathetic and if you're going to care about the people around you, so then you're going to have a across-the-board type of connection. And therefore, an occasion like this demands a response. Demands that you should also feel this type of connection. So how does that play out in terms of the practicalities? One of the interesting things that we find, it sounds like for the Gemara, this is a little bit in the first part, so and elsewhere, that the chiyuv of Simchas Chasen and Kala includes at least the chasen. Like the chasen has an obligation of simcha. Just to give a background, in the Gemara, the first part, the Gemara there has a notion that Chazal kind of instituted a takana to make sure that the man who is doing the marrying, the chasen, should have the time and the context in which to make a proper suda, a suda that's really going to be a strong simcha. So that gives you the impression that this is not simply something that others have a chiyuv to do, but that even the participants themselves, or at least the chassid, we'll focus on that for a moment, has also the mitzvah. So does that tell us anything, or how, what would you understand about that? Like, what kind of a mitzvah would it be if the chassan is also a part of it? Which would seem to be a different model, right? Do we say that by nichem haveilu, by bitacholim, that there's a chiyuv on the avel, the chola, to be a part of the chassan? So, does that help us characterize the mitzvah at all?
Yeah, a lot of it, you know? like if you're mourning for, let's say, their relative, you have a mitzvah,
some
more for them.
Right, it's a mitzvah of avelus.
Right.
So presumably that's a different component, though.
Right.
But one can probably say a lot of lumdas to talk about how they're all part of one idea, and I'm sure they are. But the chesed of mitzvah avelus creates its own space, presumably, that the avel is not really a part of. Now, you could say a lot of reasons why there is pardon, and those who say that there's a mitzvah on the Avel, it's nachem, there's a lot of lumdas you can say, but strictly speaking, most other chasadim, it sounds like the recipient is the recipient, and the other individual who's dealing with him is the Baal Chesed. So, what is the mitzvah simchas ha'asani kala if it applies to the chasadim also?
You're more related to the actual mitzvah of the wedding than it is the actual individuals who are taking part in the wedding.
Okay, meaning what?
When we have like the yecholim, so the mitzvah is guided that you're going to help the chola. So there, because they're the disadvantaged party. But if the person isn't disadvantaged, then you're not going to help him. So it would just be like kind of a corollary to just the mitzvah of getting married involves this idea of simply independent of the people involved, or at least partially.
That's an interesting idea. What would that mean practically? What would you think that the mitzvah to get married doesn't just mean to get married, it also includes
the occasion itself is like one to be happy about, and I guess like a way of expressing that is directly towards the chasam and kaf, but they also have to be happy at their own wedding.
And what does that mean? Like, why would that be true? Like, what's the chi of simcha about? Happens to be, just to kind of support what you're saying, just so you can continue using this, explain it with Rav Yosef Engel in his Chidushim to Ksuvos. We've quoted him many times in the past in various stories, but in Chidushim directly on Shas, which are called Gilyonei HaShas. So Gilyonei HaShas, he assumes that since we find imagery that connects the wedding day to Yontif, so just like Simchas Yontif means that the participants are all happy, so too, the wedding day, the participants have a mitzvah for themselves also. So, answer me two questions. So what does that mean? And why should that be? And if that's true, so should we say, so therefore, how does that connect to the guests? Does that mean that they are a part of the same mitzvah? There's a mitzvah of simcha, and therefore all their friends also have a mitzvah of simcha? Or are these two separate things? The mitzvah on the chasam and kala to be happy, and there's some other component than everyone else? What does that mean? Any thoughts about that? What would it mean to say that the mitzvah applies to the couple themselves, or to the chasam specifically?
If it's for the chassan, he's supposed to make himself happy, or he's supposed to make his wife happy?
Oh, also a very good question to ask, right? Is it that it's like, if it's really like simchas yontif, like Rabbi Spangle was bringing up, so presumably, let's try to think about what that comparison would mean, if we accept that comparison. Right, what is simchas yontif about? Sorry?
Suda.
A suda, that's the kli, right? And so too, we'll have to talk about that when it comes to the wedding, so we have certain vehicles that are meant to bring about simcha. And we talked about this Rosh Hashanah time, about how on Yontif, so the idea that eating a meal on Yontif is simchas Yontif, so presumably it's a means to an end, right? The mitzvah is really the emotion, and drinking wine on Yontif is a means to an end of bringing about the emotion of simchas Yontif. So what is the means to an end in the context of a wedding? You know, that and more, presumably. But we're really asking the question from the other end. You know, why do we want to be happy at Yontif? What's the Tamiya Mitzvahs? What if to think about it? Why do the Torah say "V'samachta b'chagecha"?
Well, it depends on what holiday.
Okay, that's what the Regalim would say. What's Pshat on the Regalim?
Pesach, you're celebrating freedom, and Shavuos, you're celebrating Matan Torah. Meaning the bigger themes of the day that you're going to celebrate.
Is that what the Simcha is about? Yeah, now we can get really long if you really want to follow that path. I would argue that that's not necessarily true, that the Yontif itself exists with certain themes, but the mitzvah Simchas Yontif is a general mitzvah klalos on Yontif, which probably, for most purposes, the same mitzvah on Pesach as it is on Shavuos as it is on Sukkot, even though on Sukkot we have all the idea that it's more intense. But the notion of Simchas Yontif, Samachta B'chagecha, is probably one klalistic mitzvah, right, which doesn't really tie into the specifics of any given Yontif. So in other words, to get very technical about it, we have Yontif, we have Sukkot for whatever reason we have Sukkot, we have Shavuos for whatever reason we have Shavuos, and once a day is Yontif, there's a mitzvah of Simchas Yontif that kicks it. Right, so I would assume that probably the idea is that Yontif is a time when we are categorized as being Lifnei Hashem, we're in God's presence, And that requires a certain response. It's not right to not recognize Yontif and feel the state of simcha that corresponds to being in God's presence. And if you say that the chassan has something comparable to that, so you might be saying that this reflects a certain stage of his life, her life, and that by its very nature it would be wrong not to respond to that with a certain emotion of simcha.
And by the way, this will segue directly into Parsha Shir tomorrow, just so you know, so our synergy is on a very high level this week. Synergize directly for tomorrow. But,
I mean, that might be what's going on, right? It might be that there is a component of simcha that is a necessary halachic emotional response to the occasion, and that's really on the chassan and the kala to have. Now, if that's the case, so then it could be that the mitzvah of simcha sfas and kala of the raskivas is to facilitate that, to help that. Right? That they're mechuyev to feel simcha, and we have to do whatever we can as the guests to make that more effective. And especially combined with the point that was made before, that if there's a vulnerability because there are anxieties associated with it, so then all the more so, we need the help of the chevra in order to make sure that that happens. Now, alternatively, and we'll have to flesh this out a little bit, it could also be that there is a specific obligation that the chassan has towards the kala, which is part of the reason why I keep switching back and forth between talking about the chassan and talking about the couple. Right? Maybe on some level, so there really is a mitzvah specifically focused on the kala, and that mitzvah applies to the chassan and applies maybe also to everyone else. Right, which would be a particularly ksubis-oriented idea. Right, for homosecht is really about the obligations of one spouse to the other, and often primarily of the husband towards the wife. Maybe specifically within the first parak of ksubis, in Shoktu, in the second parak, case of Rakt and Sayakala, that maybe these ideas reflect part of the obligation the husband has towards his wife. Now, one idea to keep in mind, remember another question we answered yesterday, we'll have to try to flesh this out a little bit. What are the differences, if any, is there a difference between the two terms that we find even just in this one set from Shulchan Aruch? Right? We saw two different terms. We're not sure whether they're identical or not. Right? We have, on the one hand, Simchus, Chassid, and Kala, and then we have another phrase on our daf. Second paragraph to this, and also in that halacha in Shulchan Aruch of Hachnasas Kala, right? Hachnasas seems to focus specifically on the Kala, and we have to figure out, is that something else? Or is that the same thing as Simchas Chas and the Kala? What exactly is going on there? So let's keep this question in mind as we go a little bit further. What is the... what's the standard? So on our daf, for example, so we find the din, right, of Mevatnim Talmud Torah Lefnei Hachnasas Kala. Right? This is Gemara on our daf, and you're Zayin of Aleph, let's actually open the Gemara, why not? Right, so this is the din that we see at the top of the first wide line, Tana Rabbanim Mevatnim Talmud Torah Lehotsoas HaMeis Vila Hachnasas Kala. And Amru will love Yehuda Rabbi Loi, Yishay Mevatel Talmud Torah Lehotsoa Sameis of Nosas Kala. V'med Dvar Mamurim, Kishayni Mo Kol Tzorcha, Lo Yishay Kol Tzorcha Eim Mevatlin, Kama Kol Tzorcha. Okay, so, before reading further, so, you see the Gemara goes on to describe the standard of attendance for a funeral. Right? That's what the next few lines are about, and then the sugya ends. So the Gemara is not so explicit about how that comparison plays out as far as the wedding is concerned. So, What would you say, what is the goal of attendance for a wedding? Now, what is the whole thrust of this Gemara? This Gemara says, "Mevatlan Talmud Torah," for two things, for a funeral and for Hafnasas Kala, and then the Gemara really focuses on the funeral, which is its own whole sugya. Maybe we'll talk about it a little bit in tangent. Especially as some of our dafosis, which should give that a little bit of attention. But what's the goal, let's say, for a wedding? What would be the attendance we'd be striving for? What's the purpose of the attendance? What's the purpose of the crowd? Simcha, okay, so that's a part of it, although it's not what the Gemara talks about here specifically. Right.
For the mace, it would be like
kavod. For the mace, it's kavod, right, but we'll hear the Gemara puts the two
as
together.
As witnesses. Right.
Right? As witnesses, is that really true?
Yes, I mean, it seems like, right?
Well, I mean, in our parak, right? It's our parak, it's interesting. If you want to really get focused on the fact that it comes up in our parak, it's interesting because, you know, you don't really think about this until you mention it. Clearly, you don't mean witnesses in the Edim sense, the two Edim who are the primary witnesses, but I don't really think this is so much the focus. It's just interesting how it almost could be because it is kind of woven into the sugya that since our Gemara is focused on the awareness that a wedding happened and the call and that whole story, that maybe one could argue that there is this premise that a wedding is a very public event and that it should be known, and that maybe from that angle we want the whole seaboard to be a part of it, which is an interesting thought to consider. I don't think that's really what it's about, but it's just interesting how it does kind of relate to its placement within our sugya. But what else? What else could be the purpose of having people at a wedding, having a lot of people at the wedding? So simcha has been mentioned. Simcha, now why are having a lot of people, why are the people being there necessarily a factor of simcha? Okay, to know that people are happy for you helps. People will do things when they're there. They will sing and dance. That will hopefully make you happy. Anything else? What else is a possible idea? Let's focus for a second on the fact that it's there together with Hotzos Hameis. So kavod might be the idea, right? In the context, if the two halachas are linked, we're not sure that they are, but one could get the impression that they're linked. They're mentioned in the same sentence. So presumably, in the context of Hameis, it's about kavod. So maybe the idea here is also that you want to show kavod to maybe the kala. Right? Here the focus is on the kala specifically. So maybe we want to show kavod to her. Why is that meaning? Right? We understand at the funeral, the whole funeral is about kavod. Right? It's kavod achron, that's what the whole thing is. So the people, the crowd, contribute to the kavod for the mace. Why is kavod a part of a wedding, especially if you focus on the kala's kavod? I mean, it could be a function of this whole ketz miraktiv with the akala idea, right? That we want the husband to appreciate who he's getting. That maybe we're concerned, again, throughout our whole perception that the husband should properly value her. So we make hakanas of ksuba and the like to make sure that he values his wife, he doesn't divorce her easily, etc., etc. And maybe that's what this is about also, that we want, at the time of the wedding, we want the wedding to be not simply the context in which the technical kinyan kedusha takes place, but we want the wedding to be an event that will make the chassan properly value his kala and feel like he's really a very fortunate person, and maybe that's what this whole daf is about. And maybe that's what Kate's interacting with now. Kala, everything on your Zion, come on, everything on your Zion with Aleph is all about that, is all about making the chassan feel proper appreciation for the kala, which helps make the marriage more solid. Right, that's what we saw some of the ideas yesterday, that it's a little bit of reserve in the bank for later on when they end up fighting over who knows what. So the fact that they recognize that they're very fortunate people and relationships like this don't come easily, and we're not going to let it fall apart over something small. Morty?
We also found, similar under the cover idea, there's also the idea that there's like imagery of Matan Torah by, or the reverse also by Hutsas Mason, also by a wedding.
Okay.
So the Gemara says explicitly that we're going to honor him just with just as much people as the Torah was given.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the Maharsha talks about the Chamisha Kolos,
mm-hmm.
and our first, like, the way the Torah was given also, that the Torah, the weddings are like reminiscent of Har Sinai, where we were Hashem's bride. Or,
right, we have a lot of imagery like that, by the way, which is itself, you know, probably more of a broad Hashkafic theme, but, you know, the idea that Matan Torah represents a chuppah, you know, when the Gemara says in Shabbos and Daf Peches that God held the mountain on top of the Jewish people, so there's an imagery there of a chuppah, and the imagery of the luchos and the king and kedushin. You know, there's all kinds of imagery of chuppah and wedding at the time of Matan Torah. Now, where do we go with that? It's an interesting.
So it would be like kavod Torah, kavod the mitzvah that they're doing right now.
Perhaps. Instead of saying, oh, so that other part that you focus on is also interesting, right? If you want to say that it's about a mitzvah specifically, that opens up a whole other angle, right? So that gives us now two distinct angles we could be focusing on. We could say that this is all about making the chassan realize how important an occasion this is and how happy he should be. On the other hand, it could also be that it's not so much about that, but it's about, this is a mitzvah, but it's a mitzvah that for some reason requires a little bit more attention than other mitzvahs do, a little bit more pomp and circumstance. If you recall yesterday when we mentioned the Bechanan, that was the context in which he said it. Bechanan first said that maybe we want to be machabe, those who are doing a mitzvah, and then he went on to say, "I but still, why this mitzvah differently than all other mitzvahs? Because we also need to give them chizik." So this could affect the question of what kind of attendance are we striving for. And if you believe that it's about trying to make the husband appreciate her, so then you could say that the idea is that whatever corresponds to the stature that she has, so that's the kind of crowd that we're shooting for, something that's appropriate. And by appropriate, we usually mean a little bit more. Like we talk about his faith, and we talk about other such things, and we give room for a little bit of exaggeration. So whatever is in keeping with her chashivas, her personal chashivas, so we should want something that reflects that, and with these things we try to overshoot a little bit. And so maybe that's what it means. That's the way the Sefer Chuppas Chasan is the classic Sefer on issues of Nisun, as you can imagine. So that's how he assumes that that's the issue, that whatever is in keeping with the Kala's stature, that's what we're looking for. The Shita Mekubetzes on his daf, the Shita Mekubetzes, what does he say? Says that the idea is we should try for as many people as possible, because Berovam Adras Melech. So that seems to really focus on its mitzvah component. I want to do mitzvahs in general in the context of a lot of people. So because it's a mitzvah, there's clearly something about it that's different than other mitzvahs. But it's its mitzvah nature that is driving this desire for a large crowd, which might be more along the lines of what Morty's saying here, that this mitzvah represents also broad themes, the themes of Matan Torah, and themes that are more than just your average everyday mitzvah. So covenant for the mitzvah means it should happen with as many people as possible.
So if we think it's a hasher mitzvah, so, or it's not even, but if we're saying that it's a mitzvah as even a mitzvah on its own right before Peru, so then you could also understand why it would be like much like a greater stature of a mitzvah. So like it's about like the continuation of the Jewish people.
You're saying if Peru is the mitzvah?
No, even I was saying, especially through mitzvah, but then that also makes that the wedding is just a hashem mitzvah, which makes it less important in its own right. But even if you're going to say that the wedding is its own mitzvah and through is its own mitzvah, so then they're still related to each other.
Right. And I think it's for sure true. I'm trying to think which part to emphasize more. I think it all kind of contributes to the same idea. But you're probably right that both sides have that angle to it, that either it's a mitzvah by itself, which therefore the more so seems to require attention,
or if it's a hechsher mitzvah, the mitzvah for which it's a hechsher is about dafka, the continuation.
Even if it's a mitzvah on its own right, it's still related to her.
Right. Well, maybe not. I mean, like the way the Rambam was suggesting it, maybe not. You know, it might be just be about that the male-female relationship has to be formalized. But you're probably right. It all contributes to a larger structure of family creation and family stability, which itself is already also a link to Har Sinai, because Har Sinai is probably when the Jewish people were created. And so in addition to everything else, you have the imagery going in the other direction, that Har Sinai is like a wedding, because it's a wedding of creation of a family, the creation of the Jewish family. And therefore, every creation of a contemporary Jewish family harkens back to Har Sinai too. So clearly there's a lot of imagery there, a lot of overlapping imagery. So it could be that we want to make him more confident, or it could be that this is all about the mitzvah, and it could be some combination of both. Now,
whatever it is, why is it directed towards him? The woman?
Why is it directed towards her?
Towards him.
It's not necessarily the question. We're not sure yet how much emphasis to put on.
The Gemara makes it seem like it's him because of the
this part. Right. So that's where we see these phrases, which kind of seem to go going back and forth, and we're not sure whether interchangeable or not. So it could be like just again the one sentence in Shulchan Aruch starts off mitzvah sameach chasim dekala, and then the last line is vavlin talmud Torah lahachnasas kala. So we don't know how much we medayik in that. Are there two separate concepts, one which is kala focused, or are these interchangeable terms, and somehow we just use them differently? Right, we know that nowadays, you know, in the secular society too, sometimes, or more so maybe, you find that a wedding is often portrayed as a bride's event, even though it should theoretically be the two equally, but that there is sometimes an emphasis on the bride as the star of the show. So if that's the case, you know, the expression Achnasas Kala might, well, it's not necessarily the case, but it might just be an expression for the wedding, and we focus on the kala as the main attraction. So,
but really, in that case, it would actually be the chasen.
Right.
The chasen are either the chasen and the kala.
It's possible that hafnasas kala is just a way of saying the wedding as a whole. It's possible. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be the most likely interpretation, but it's theoretically possible. Okay. So, in this context of trying to get a large audience. So you find that the din that we find over here in the Batman Talmud Torah and the Halacha, there is a discussion that there are those who write that this idea of a Batman Talmud Torah, you have to figure out what the Chiddush is. Right? Because, strictly speaking, just a little background. So, what would the Havamina be? Right? What's the din? If I didn't have this Gemara, so what would you think is the din?
That you can be without those. I mean, that you can not go to the wedding.
Okay, so why would you think that?
Because you should give more kavod to the Torah, right? Seven more yeshivas.
Okay, is that the only principle involved?
I should have come out
Oh, so that's a question, right? So there is a rule in general of osek mitzvah patam in a mitzvah. Right, if somebody's involved in one mitzvah, so normally he's exempt from other mitzvahs. Now, somewhat ironically, paradoxically, the Gemara says in Moed Katan, in Daf Tes, that this rule doesn't apply straight out to Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah, one might think, okay, Talmud Torah can be cool, so how the Homer should apply to Talmud Torah, that somebody who's involved in learning is all the more so, pater from everything else. But the halacha we find is a little more complicated. That strictly speaking, Talmud Torah does not pater you from other mitzvos. And particularly, Sarah just said that except if it's a mitzvah she'efer esher lasus, if it's a mitzvah that other people could do just as well, and you're learning and they're not, so then let the others do it. But if it's a mitzvah that's specific for you, so then you're not pater from it, and you have to stop learning and go do that. So one could have said that I don't need this Gemara. Right? This is the din for all mitzvos. this is a mitzvah, right? Mitzvah chasam kala is a mitzvah. That's the first line. We could ask again, look at this one sif in Shulchan Aruch. So the first words are, mitzvah sameach chasam kala. So then, I know already, osu b'torah is not part of a mitzvah. Why do I need the last line in the sif? Mevat l'tam b'torah. So what's the chiddush? Right, so what could be the chiddush here?
Even though other people are able to do it.
Okay, so it might be that's the din, that's the difference. That all the mitzvahs, you're not part of the Eshelasi De Acherim, and you're not tired. You shouldn't do it if it's Eshelasi De Acherim. And here, you should. Although, that opens up a question in itself, right? Because the questions are interconnected. What does Eshelasi De Acherim mean? Right? If this is a mitzvah, there's a set idea, we need a minion for every wedding. So you could say, all right, you got 10 guys, so you don't need me. But if the number is more than that, and if it's not a defined number, so then what do you mean, Efshel Asa De'Acherim? We need the Acherim, and you need me too. Right? So what does that mean, Efshel Asa De'Acherim? Unless you want to say that that's maybe the point. Right? Maybe the whole din is that you could have thought that there is some kind of set number, and that once the guest list hits a certain point, then you don't need to be the one, let it be somebody else who's not learning. Just leave the yeshiva guys out of it. And maybe that's what the Gemara is telling you, that don't think this is Efshel Asa De'Acherim, that the need to have a lot of people there that's going to require that you're going to have to close your Gemara too, and not say they have enough people there. Shmuley?
You also say that maybe this what can't even be done on De'Acherim?
So that's what it means. But why not? I mean, because if what we were just saying a second ago is because it's all about more people, so then what's the Acherim? Acherim are there and they still need you. But you can say more than that?
You can say that there's no defined number,
mm-hmm.
but maybe, I don't know exactly how it would work, but even more than that is that you can't do this on the Acherim, that your personal fear isn't allowed to be swimming on other people.
Well, see, it's interesting also to reflect on what that could mean. That it's unclear whether this Gemara is saying that specifically, but you have to read a lot into it, although there's certainly truth to it, right? So we all know we're going to have to figure out practically, and we'll have to continue this a little bit. You know, what we'll do, probably, this sugya shouldn't take us so much longer. What we'll do, we'll spend a few more minutes on this. Probably what we'll connect the Hatzos and Mesa again is to finish it off a little bit at the beginning of next week. But what the Gemara could be telling us here a little bit is that, and we have to figure this out either way, is that we know that clearly this din, whatever it is, that requires us to attend weddings, it can't be that it applies equally to every person. Right? We know that nobody here goes to every wedding in our city or in our circles, and nobody here is invited to every wedding. But certainly if we're assuming that this Gemara is talking about the pre-invitation context, you know, so what does it mean? Right? So you live in the place in Washington Heights, you have to go to every wedding, what exactly are we talking about? So maybe on some level, maybe there was a social structure in which that was the case. But presumably it's always been the case that there are gradations, that there are people who are closer to the couple who are expected to be there with greater intensity than people who are less in a relationship with the couple. Right? Presumably, at any given wedding, people are not equal. And there are guests whose presence is more important and guests whose presence is less important. So what that tells us is that, it's all just common sense, but what it tells us is that it's not simply about how many people are at the wedding. Clearly, it's also relevant to who those people are, and that there are people who, by their very nature, contribute something unique to the experience of a Simchas Chasam Kala. And if that person is going to say, well, too bad, I'm learning, so then there's going to be something missing which nobody else can fix. So it could be that that's the Chiddush of the Gemara, that Gemara is just trying to tell you that this is not a din where you can really employ terminology of Efshel Asa De'Acherim. Because, either because the number is essentially infinite, or because every individual who me, the category of going, makes a unique contribution that a different person couldn't just simply step in. Or you could go a little further and say that maybe we could theoretically come up with a scenario where that's Shabbos and Seder, which is possible. Maybe we can say, like we've just mentioned before, the possibility that maybe there is some type of a rough sense of how much a certain wedding is supposed to have. So if that's the case, so then maybe you could come up with a scenario where it's after Lassel Soyed Harem, where other people could make up the right number, and you're not specifically more desired at this event than other people are. In which case, it sounds like then the Gemara is telling you a chiddush, that even the Efshir Lassus De'echeirin, that this is a mitzvah that we'll say is worth the bittul tov. Now, why is that? That itself we'll have to figure out. The Tashbetz, by the way, right, which is very similar to what the Morty was saying before, is that maybe the wedding itself is a form of Talmud Torah. That maybe the wedding is a commemoration of themes of the Sinas HaTorah, of the content of the Torah, and that maybe on some level, attending the wedding is a key of Talmud Torah, in a way that the whole language of Bavak and Talmud Torah is a little bit of a misnomer. Because it's not really about Bittul Torah, but in itself is a type of Talmud Torah. So there is a machlokes haposkim that there are those who maintain that an extra chiddush is that, let's say you have a category of Torah so menoso, right? That sometimes you find, and we assume that nowadays we don't really have people like this, but that theoretically the category of somebody who is on such a madrega that they're learning, it's not sound that they're learning that everyone else learns, but they learn with such hasmada that learning really defines every second of their day. So we find, for example, the Yerushalmi talks about in the context of certain parts of davening, that even though we assume that everyone davens a full tefillah regardless of whether they're learning or not, but theoretically you could have somebody who's so involved, taras and nasa, so completely defined by his learning, that we really reduce his personal obligations to the minimum, because everything else about him is cool of Torah. So it was a machlokes haposkim. Does this din of Bavatlan Talmud Torah, so does it apply specifically or even to include somebody of Taras and Nas? So that was a little bit of machlokes. The Cardinal Masano says no, it doesn't include Taras and Nas. On the other hand, the Bach writes that even the Gadol Hador, the Yachid Hador, the unique Gadol Hador, going to have such a chiyuv. So that seems to also be tied in to figuring out what exactly is going on in this specific line in our Gemara. Now you also find the discussion on the side of the page of the Shulchan Aruch, the Pisha and the Shach, side of the page of the Torah, side of the page of the Shulchan Aruch, that Beis Shmuel, for example, Beis Shmuel writes, you know, that what is the mitzvah? So is the mitzvah simply to attend the wedding? Or is there something that you've got to be doing while you're there? So presumably it's more than attending. The Beis Shmuel notes that the language of Beis Shmuel, and this is the Shulchan Aruch, Beis Shmuel writes that the mitzvah is to go there and to be mesameach them. Right, so it sounds like it's got two components to it, to go and to make merry. Others, however, the Prisha, for example, suggests that maybe it has a different focus, because there is a Gemara in the first parak of Brachos. Right, you saw the Gemara in the first parak of Brachos. What's the language of the Gemara over there? Kol hanen mi sudas chasan ve'eno misamcho over mishum hey kolos. Like that whoever goes to the suda of the chasan kala, and yet whoever benefits from the suda's chasan kala, and is not misameach, then is in violation of something.
You're violating all those five kolos if you're nanimis, you must pass the enemy.
So the preacher reads that as categorizing the chiyuv differently. Right? It sounds like, what are we talking about? We're not necessarily saying you're mechuyev to go in the first place. But what are we saying? That there's something wrong with being there and not participating actively in the zone. So you could read that as saying that, okay, if you don't go in the first place, all right, you're mad. But if you go to the wedding and you eat from the meal and you're not in sameach then, so then there's something specifically lacking. Bochanan has a discussion about that also. What would you think? What's the thrust of that Gemara? What's the Gemara telling you? Like by emphasizing Hanana the Eino Misamcha.
It's all about you,
so you're just changing the whole focus. That's, you know, on a hashkafic level, that could be true. You could also say, if Bochanan considers, maybe it's some type of Zeilo. Right, that maybe the meal is only there because you're here, because we're hoping you're going to contribute to the atmosphere. If you're going to come just for the food and not contribute to the atmosphere at all, so then the food wasn't meant for you. So then maybe it's a type of gezel. So the question of why do you want to say that? Okay. Or you say it's gezel rather than focusing on over machine head goals.
So the reason why is
sorry?
Isn't over the Chamesh Kolos the reason why it's Gezel?
You mean since he... Well, you could say without that. You could say that the food was only laid out for people who plan on coming and celebrating with us. If you come and you're not so bad, so then the food was never here in the first place. Maybe. So, it could be about that, or it could be the Gemara is not really focusing on that, but the Gemara is saying that there's just something worse there. If you go and you're a part of this event, and yet you're not Mesameach, then that's really not right. You don't go in the first place, okay, whatever. But if you go and you're not Mesameach, then so now you're really lacking in empathy. Right? If we said the whole idea is empathy, that you should feel the shyness, you should feel the connection to this couple. So for a person who's actually present at the wedding and yet is not responding with appropriate simchas tasa and kala, maybe that's kind of an overt lack of empathy. So there is a discussion whether these, this Beis Shmuel and this Prisha, for example, they argue with each other. Beis Shmuel seems to say you have to go in the first place, and the Prisha, who's emphasizing more going but not being sameach tasa and kala, so are they arguing with each other? There was a sefer called Kesser Ephraim a few decades ago by Ephraim Chuch. So he also wrote an article that was published, if I recall correctly, where he wanted to note that they're not necessarily at odds with each other. It could be they're both true. Right? It could be that on one level there's an need to come in the first place, is what the Beis Shmuel was saying. But we know that there are limitations. That the mice, life is what it is, can't be at every event. So you can only go do what you can do. But somebody who is able to come and yet is not misameach when he's there, so then that person is really doing something wrong. It could be they're both true. Right? L'chadchila you should go. And if you go, then for sure you really have to be misameach, then otherwise, you're doing something fundamentally wrong. So, in that context, it's possible to say that, and this is the point that the author of the Kesser Ephraim goes on to bring out, that maybe these two statements are also referring to different components. That maybe on the one hand, there is the mitzvah of Simchas Chasan and Kala. And there also is the obligation of Hafnasas Kala, which
constitute something else. And people have to figure out exactly what that means and what the difference is between the two. So we'll just say a few more words, then we'll have to pick up with this next time. But it's also just important to know in the context of all this that we know that in general we talk about simcha and tzulas mitzvah. But we do find in halacha in general that there is an inyan of being mishtatef in a sudas mitzvah. Right? That when there is a sudas mitzvah, so there is an obligation to be there if possible. And we're familiar with this, particularly in the context of brisim. Right? That we find when it comes to a bris. So there is this notion which should on the surface really be different than other sudas mitzvah, but that there is a notion specifically of attending if you can. And there are some who write also that this same din of mevatlin applies to a bris also, which is not necessarily obvious, right? You'd have to assume that that's because of the focus on mevatlin is because it's a sudas mitzvah. So then you can maybe extend it to the bris also. If it's about something unique to the covenant of the kala, maybe it shouldn't necessarily carry over. But in the context of bris, I spent a long time on the bridge this morning trying to get to a bris and eventually didn't make it. But, that was the kind of about the Torah for sure. the bris part was not the kind. But the idea that bris is a chiyuv to go if you're invited, I'm sure you've heard this idea, which is why we have really a hanhaga not to invite people to bris and just to inform people about bris. I'm sure you've heard this idea or concern that somebody's invited to a bris and chooses not to come. So then there's a real act of a bittul, a say, so to speak. So then the shaila is, maybe we should have the same hanhaga for wedding invitations. Right? That there is grounds to say that you shouldn't invite people to weddings either. So there are some poskim who are concerned about this. Ironically, the discussion of this day tshuva that, you know, clearly when it comes to weddings, we seem to go in the opposite direction, right? We very much go to expense to formally invite people. So when it comes to a person, we have this policy of not inviting people, just informing them. When it comes to weddings, so we certainly do have invitations. So as much as that's the word, and that's the language on the invitation, there are those who suggest the discussion, not just in the Piskei Tshuva, that the very formality of the wedding invitation itself is an indication that it's really more of an announcement than it is an invitation. Which you might consider a little bit of a stretch, especially considering the language, but that maybe this is a concern that we should have by wedding invitations also. Maybe that's how they should be perceived. The Moshe Sternberg writes in his Truvis, he thinks that this is more of a philosophical idea, that the criticism that you find to somebody who doesn't attend the Sudas Mitzvah, who doesn't attend the bris or a wedding, it doesn't apply to somebody who, logistically, because of the details of their lives, are not able to get there. And the idea is that if somebody philosophically believes that this is beneath their time, that they're important people, they're not going to waste their time on a Sudas Mitzvah, they're not going to waste their time on a bris or a wedding, so then that's the criticism that you find somebody who disrespects the Sudas Mitzvah and does it. But somebody who simply can't make it, is stuck on the bridge all morning, or whatever it is, or it doesn't even have the ability to try in the first place. So then, if Shnurbach and others right, that that's not included in the criticism that they have for somebody who can't be mishtatef from the Sudas Mitzvah. Right, so we'll have to see a little bit more how some of these details play out, especially the possible distinction between Knesset Kala and Simchas Vasim Kala. We have to figure out what practically Simchas Vasim Kala asks of us, and also what is our Gemara telling us, Gabe Hotzos Hameis, and the relationship between the two. So we'll have to just fill that in beginning with next week. Again, tomorrow we'll look for some super synergy as far as this topic and the parsha, but just to quickly review, we spoke about it, so we speak about it there, we try to figure out what does it mean, Simchas Vasim Kala, a little bit of extension of yesterday's discussion as to what the theme is about. If the idea is that the Chassan is also obligated, what does that reflect? And what does it reflect about everyone else's obligation towards it? Because the Engel's observation is comparable to Simchas Yontif. So we spoke about that a little bit. What would that mean about Simchas Yontif, and what would that mean about this? then we consider questions of the imagery of wedding and matatora and how they relate to each other. And we talked about our Gemara here about Mabat and Tamatora. What would that mean practically and what would it mean conceptually? What's the standard? Is that whatever is relevant to the cover of the Kala, or is it the Rov of Hadrus Malach? Is it even more than that? What's the din of the Bat Kamatara? What's the Chiddush? If we normally say that Osik Patara is not Patra Menach Mitzvah, so what's the Chiddush here? So either the Chiddush is that we don't call this Efshar Lasa de Acherim, either because the numbers are infinite, or because you make a unique contribution no one else can make. Or maybe the Chiddush is that even if it is Efshar Lasa de Acherim, or maybe it's that even somebody is Taras from Nasa, so Hol Machlokes about that. And then we got into the question of the question of the Shmuel's position that you have to come in the first place. The Rishon is saying it's more about Nedek, which is Chasidei Masamcho. What's that more about? How could you reconcile the two? That probably means that there is an ideal to go in the first place, but if you're going in Nansumat, then you're really missing something. And then we talked about this question about Sidos Mitzvah in general and how this compares to a bris and the idea of why we in general don't extend invitations to a bris and how could you do the idea of the wedding invitation, and Sternbuch's observation that probably the criticism is more about somebody who thinks the whole experience is beneath him rather than somebody who simply can't make it. Alright, so far so good. Any questions about that? Alright, so we will stop here. I have one stop minute for us.